Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Today we've got a daily briefing pulled entirely from launches that just went live, along with what their makers and commenters are actually saying about them.
And there's a real thread running through a lot of these. A whole cluster of them are about working with AI agents. Not getting agents to write more code, but getting them to debug better, learn from their mistakes, hold back, and stay coordinated. Then we'll shift gears into some smaller, more human tools. Journaling that locks, family voices turned into films, a commute timer, a movie tracker, and a couple of creative tools that get your work all the way out into the world.
Let's start at the top with the one that paints the most vivid picture. It's 2 a.m., production is down, and your AI agent is the one on call.
Okay, so the product is called Hyperprobe, and the pitch is right in the tagline, debug production without redeploying. The problem they're framing is familiar to anyone who's run back-end services. Something breaks in production. It doesn't reproduce locally. It passed tests. It passed code review. And your logs and traces never captured the in-memory state at the moment of failure.
Right, so the classic move is add a console log, redeploy, and wait for the issue to happen again. And meanwhile, it keeps bleeding users. That's the loop Hyperprobe says it kills.
Exactly. Instead, your agent, they name Claude Code, Codex, or Cursor, can drop a probe into the running service using their MCP integration. The probe is described as a read-only, non-blocking snapshot of live variable state at a specific line of code. It fires on real traffic, captures the exact values at that moment, and then disappears. The service never pauses.
So the agent gets the data it was missing and can debug like it has a local reproduction, closing the bug in one sitting. They claim that changes the picture dramatically. 3 to 4 hours to root cause becomes under 10 minutes. Redeployments per incident go from a few to zero, and you don't need 2 or 3 senior engineers pulled into the investigation.
Now, those are their numbers, so let's treat them as claims. The flagship example is a payments issue solved in 9.5 minutes that they say previously took engineers 4 hours. And the website walks through a full incident timeline, start to finish, which is actually pretty useful for understanding how it works.
Walk us through that, because it's a nice illustration.
So, 2:47 a.m., PagerDuty fires. High error rate on an order status endpoint, 23% of requests failing, 847 failures in 10 minutes, and no exception in the logs. At 2:48, Hyperprobe reads the distributed traces and follows the chain. The order service is healthy, but a downstream payment service is returning 404 seconds. Payments exist in the gateway, but aren't in the system. So a write failed silently somewhere upstream.
Then at 2:49, it places a virtual breakpoint on the webhook handler, the place where the payment gateway records payments. No redeploy, service keeps running. And at 2:50, the snapshot captures a live request and finds the bug. The gateway is sending a pending status the code has no case for, and the idempotency check marks the payment as processed before confirming it.
What I like about that example is it's the kind of failure that's genuinely hard with logs alone. A third party changed behavior, added a status value, and nothing ever threw an error. They actually list that whole category. Silent failures that return 200 with the wrong body, exceptions far from the cause, swallowed exceptions, race conditions where you need thread state at the exact moment of overlap, business metric drops with no exception anywhere.
And they say it works even when nothing ever pages you. Okay, so how does it stay safe? Because letting an agent attach things to production sounds scary. They do address this.
They claim several layers. The probe is read only. The agent captures state but cannot write memory or execute code. Every probe goes into an immutable audit trail. It's approval gated until you trust it. It runs inside your own infrastructure, self-hosted, or in a private VPC, so nothing leaves your environment. III gets redacted at the agent before capture, and your security team defines what can be observed.
On performance, they say the breakpoint fires asynchronously, requests complete at full speed, and they claim less than 1% overhead at 3,000 requests per second. The makers, two founders who say they spent years running production at scale, previously at OYO and LimeTray, make a bigger argument too, that telemetry itself will shift from always on to on demand because agents only need the data at the moment of the incident.
Their framing is that engineers used to carry critical context about the systems they built, and that context is shrinking now that coding agents write and ship most of the code. So when something breaks at 2 a.m., nobody can explain why the running system behaved that way. That's the gap they're selling into.
And the community? This is where it gets interesting, because the commenters did not just applaud. One asked directly whether customer-sensitive data ever leaves the application and how this squares with certifications like SOC 2, GDPR, HIPAA. Another pushed harder, saying read-only isn't the same as safe. The probe still lifts live variable values, so the first question any security team will ask is what happens when an agent probes a frame holding a card number or a session token, and whether that value ends up in hyperprobe storage.
Same commenter also poked at the zero overhead claim, saying they'd want a P99 latency number next to it, which is a fair point, because averages can hide the slow tail. Though, to be clear, that commenter also said the 9.5-minute story is the number that actually sells the product.
Another commenter raised the guardrails question from a different angle. Read-only still means the agent is deciding on its own, at 2 a.m., which production service to attach a probe to and what to inspect. Is there a human approval step in that path, or is the trust boundary basically, we trust the agent's judgment on production systems, out of the box? The website does mention approval gating and audit logs, but the specifics of how much autonomy you grant are clearly something teams will want to nail down.
There were practical questions too. Does it slow down my app? Does it work smoothly with multiple apps at once? How is sensitive product data handled? And one request for Go support, which suggests language coverage matters to people. They list JavaScript, TypeScript, Java, Python, and Ruby currently.
So who's this for? Teams shipping fast using coding agents, where production incidents burn hours and the missing value is never in the logs. What changes versus existing options, Sentry, Datadog, the observability stack, is that those tools reason over data you already have, and Hyperprobe captures new evidence at the moment of failure. One commenter even joked it's one shot, two birds, Sentry and Datadog. I'd read that as positioning, not a verdict.
Right. And the honest unknowns. We don't know real adoption. And the big open question, security and autonomy in production, is exactly what the sharpest commenters flagged. Treat the case studies as maker claims.
Which brings us nicely to the next cluster, because if your agent can debug, the next question is, can it learn not to make the same mistake twice?
Two products on this theme today, and they attack opposite failure modes. The first is Reflexio, the pitch, behavioral learning that makes AI agents better over time. When users correct an agent, when a path fails, when something works particularly well, Reflexio turns that experience into behavior the agent can reuse next time.
The co-founder, Yi, says he was a tech lead at Meta and an adjunct professor at the University of Washington, and the founding frustration was that agents never actually get better with use. Even with memory, an agent that failed a task yesterday fails the same way today across different users, because nothing connects what happened in production back to how the agent behaves next time.
The manual alternative is brutal. Reading traces, spotting failures, rewriting prompts, forever. Reflexio autonomously observes your agent's live traces, extracts lessons from successes, failures, and user corrections, and continuously optimizes behavior. The headline numbers, again, their case studies, their claims, are a 36% cut in task failure rate, 57% less token usage, and improved response quality in 47% of interactions with what they call negligible regressions. Note to launch post rounds differently in places. The site says more than 30% and more than 60%. So hold all of that loosely.
There's a concrete example on the site that shows what a learning actually is. A customer says there's a $49.99 charge on their card they don't recognize. Without Reflexio, the agent refunds that one charge, and 10 minutes later the customer is back. There's also a $9.99 one. Two conversations. With Reflexio, the agent searches the full window of recent charges, presents both in one message, asks whether to refund both. One conversation, done. And the learning it extracted. Search the full window of recent charges before resolving any single one and present everything unfamiliar together.
And the architecture matters here. Nothing is retrained, no fine-tuning of models. Your agent publishes what happened, Reflexio extracts what to do differently, and the next run retrieves just the relevant signals at the moment of inference, which is how they keep token costs down. There's an SDK for Python, REST, and a 151, plus a portable skill file you can hand to Claude Code, Codex, or Cursor to wire in the loop for you.
What sets it apart from just stuffing lessons into a memory store is the governance layer, and the community zeroed in on it. Every learning is auditable. You can see what it holds and the evidence behind it. You can rewrite it, approve it, reject it, or delete it, and a rejected learning stops being used immediately. There's even a setting to make the agent use only what a human has signed off.
Learnings also evolve. The site shows an example. A learning from March saying refunds are allowed within 30 days gets replaced in June when the policy changes to 14 days. The old one retires. And each learning is tuned by the evidence it produces. Reflexio watches how it performs once the agent uses it, sees where it helped and where it fell short, and revises it. Success is measured against what you define. Was the problem solved? Did the user have to correct it? Did it end up with a human?
Now the sharp questions from commenters, and they're good ones. Several people asked how Reflexio handles conflicting feedback from different users. Does it learn a general rule or keep behavior context specific? One commenter framed the risk bluntly. If one user's correction is actually bad advice, they misunderstood the task or confidently pushed the agent toward a wrong answer, and that gets rolled up into a rule applied to every user, how do you catch that before it spreads? Is there a confidence threshold, or does every generalized rule need human sign-off?
Nobody in the source answers that fully. Others asked how the failure and token numbers were actually measured. A slash B between agents with and without it, or before and after on the same traffic? Whether optimizations tweak prompts and few-shot context, or fine-tune models behind the scenes, the site suggests the publish-retrieve loop with no retraining, but the mechanism details weren't fully specified in what we have. And there were integration questions about LangGraph and CrewAI, a TypeScript SDK request, and questions about exporting or deleting all learnings if you leave. The site does mention data rights, including users being able to have their data exported or erased on request, and bringing your own storage.
One commenter had a wry take. Part of me thinks it's just a loop with markdown files. Well, that's at least how I've got my agents learning. Which is honestly a fair characterization of a lot of agent memory setups, and Reflexio's answer is the evaluation and revocation layer on top.
Okay, so Reflexio is about learning from mistakes. Ponytail is about preventing a different mistake, building too much. The tagline is great. Make new code, the last resort.
So this is a plugin for coding agents, and the idea is to give them a stop rule. Agents are very good at writing code, maybe too good. So Ponytail enforces a ladder. Step 1. Does this even need to exist? Speculative need means skip it. Step 2. Is it already in this code base? Reuse the existing helper. Step 3. Does the standard library do it? Step 4. Does a native platform feature cover it? Their example is using a native date input instead of pulling in a picker library. Step 5. Does an already installed dependency solve it? Use it, don't add a new one. Step 6. Can it be one line? One line. And only then, step 7. Write the minimum code that works.
The maker's framing is interesting. They say a lot of last year's tooling wrapped the model in more process, and this does the opposite. Once the model can already ship the feature, the harder part is getting it to stop building. Maybe the next superpower is restraint.
The numbers on the site are claims from their own benchmarks. Medians across 12 feature tasks on a fast API and React repo. 54% less code, 22% fewer tokens, 20% lower cost, 27% faster, with what they call 100% safety kept. Meaning, validation, error handling, security, and accessibility are never simplified away. Their example, an agent writes a whole cache manager class, 40-some lines you maintain forever, and the lazier answer is Python's built-in SLUI underscore cache decorator. Same behavior, 48 fewer lines, zero bugs in code that no longer exists.
It's a two-line install for Claude Code and works with Codex, Copilot, Gemini 151, Cursor, Windsurf, Kline, Zed, and more. They say 14-plus agents. There are intensity levels. Leet just names the lazier alternative, Full enforces the latter, and Ultra, which the maker jokes is for when your codebase has wronged you personally. Plus commands like Ponytail Review to find over-engineering in the current diff, and Ponytail Audit to scan the whole repo for bloat.
Community reaction was very warm. One person said they'd been wanting exactly this. Another said they'd been using it with Claude, and it keeps the agent focused, lean, and less prone to overbuilding. But the best question in the thread is the one that matters. What about false positives? When the existing A.D function is a near match but not exact, different edge case handling, slightly different return type, does Ponytail ever push the agent to force fit the wrong tool just to avoid writing a few new lines? That would introduce a subtler bug than fresh code would.
That's unanswered in what we have, and it's the right question because reuse and wrong tool can be one edge case apart. Another commenter asked whether finding reusable code actually makes tasks net faster, the assumption being the search costs less than generating from scratch, and whether it saves tokens, which their benchmarks suggest, but again, self-reported.
So where do these learnings and rules actually live? For both products, close to the code. And that's the bridge to our next theme, the repo itself becoming the control room for agent work.
Two products here. First, Dash-Xie. Feature flags as markdown files in your repo. The origin story is charming. One of the makers asked Claude Code to add feature flags to a project, and the agent got to the part where every flag tool wants you to create an account and grab an API key, and basically gave up and wrote a process environment variable instead. That got them thinking, why can't flags just live in the repo like everything else?
So in D, every flag, or A/B test, or holdout, or staged rollout, is a single markdown file with front matter. What it does, why it exists, what you decided. Reviewed in a pull request like any other change. Your coding agent installs it with one command, no account, and on each build, Deef generates a context.json that the agent reads at session start so it knows what flags are live, what's been removed, and what's already been tried. One commenter called it, like a claw got MD for experiments.
There's real engineering in the file format, too. Audiences target on attributes you declare once, country, plan, returning visitor, and the values arrive at runtime, so no customer list is ever committed. The build resolves an exclusion graph and refuses to compile if two live tests would collide on the same user. You can also group experiments with an exclusion group line so nobody gets bucketed into two tests at once. Problems break in 101. Not in production.
And lifecycle. Think, conclude. Archives a finished experiment to a concluded folder, drafts the decision block, and appends a line to a surface log, so the next test on that screen starts informed. For analytics, either send events to your own stack, segment, amplitude, your warehouse, or add a diff cloud key and diff computes lift, and can even write the proposed decision back into the file. Self-hosted is free. Cloud is the paid piece. Git stays the source of truth either way.
Timing-wise, one commenter noted that several hosted flag services have been winding down, so an open-source repo-notive option landing now feels well-placed. And the community liked the same things repeatedly. Keeping the reasoning next to the flag, because that context usually disappears after a few weeks, and staying inside the PR review flow instead of a dashboard nobody checks.
But the sharpest critique is worth spending time on because it's the real trade-off. One commenter said, essentially, you asked for the critical version, so here it is. Flags in Git means flipping one takes a commit, a review, and a deploy. And the reason teams pay for a flag service is the kill switch at 2 a.m. without any of that. For agent-facing flags, it's a fine trade, they said, but for a gradual rollout or an active incident, it isn't. Same commenter pointed out Markdown won't fix dead flags either. Nothing gets reviewed when nothing changes, so the flag nobody has touched in 4 months is still branching in production.
Other open questions from the thread. How does it handle merge conflicts when two people, or two agents, edit the same flag file in parallel branches? Does the file structure stay manageable as the repo grows? Could it surface which flags impact user behavior most? And can you run simple UI experiments with it? The docs show a checkout button copy test with variants, weights, and guardrail metrics like refund rate. So copy experiments look supported, but broader UI testing wasn't detailed.
Now the second repo tool, GitWarren, and this one tackles the moment before the commit. The maker, who says he's coded professionally for 15 years and now juggles 5 to 7 simultaneous AI sessions daily, describes the bottleneck, the code review process, and where it happens. In his environments, half-finished AI output doesn't go to the company GitHub. By the time work is pushed there, it needs to be ready for colleagues. So he was copy-pasting comments between terminals and IDEs and wanted what he calls my local GitHub, the PR review experience, before a commit exists on his own machine.
So GitWarren is a local PR-like review app that works directly on your working tree. It reviews committed, staged, unstaged, and untracked changes. And that last one is a genuinely nice detail. An agent creates a file and never even adds it to Git, and you can still read the diff and comment on it. It organizes work into actual reviews with inline comment threads attached to specific code changes, so you can follow the discussion over time.
And the agents participate. That's the interesting part. GitWarren ships an MCP server and point Claude Code, Codex, or any MCP client at it, and it gets the same 17 tools the app itself uses. Open a review, read the discussion, reply in a thread, leave a comment on a line, resolve one. So you can ask an agent to explain its own diff or answer the question you left on line 40, and the answer stays in the review.
The trust details are thought through. Machine-written comments are always attributed as machine-written, and the tool's name comes from the MCP handshake, not whatever the model decides to call itself that day. Two agents stay two. Each MCP session gets its own 499, so simultaneous agents are told apart without cooperating. You can edit or delete anything in a review, but an agent can only fix its own messages, not quietly rewrite yours. And it's fully local. No accounts, no servers, nothing cached. Everything is read from Git at the moment it's shown. Your reviews live in a single SQLite file you can delete, and your repositories are untouched.
It's free and open source under GPL-3.0, installable on Mac via a homebrew cask, with Linux and Windows builds too. Windows isn't signed yet. The maker says he's working on it.
Community questions were practical. One commenter runs separate Git work trees per agent task and asked whether Git Warren can review across several work trees of the same repo at once, or whether it's scoped to one working tree per instance, and whether that's a deliberate scope decision. Unanswered in the source. Another asked how it handles two agent sessions touching overlapping files in the same working tree. Does it show one flat diff regardless of which agent made which change, or flag collisions before review? Also unanswered. But the general sentiment that reviewing unstaged and untracked changes before a PR even exists is the natural workflow came through clearly.
Both of these products share a philosophy with Reflexio and Ponytail. Keep the AI's work and its context close to the code and under human review, rather than off in some external dashboard. And there's one more layer underneath the whole stack. The layer that actually routes all those model calls.
Right, Experiential Labs, an open source AI gateway written in Rust with a simple pitch. Every AI model, one key, zero markup. The founders, Keon and Silen, two AI researchers, say the pain was familiar. Every new model meant another account, another key, spend tracked in another place. They wanted one gateway, combining model access, usage management, and a marketplace without adding a tax to every token, couldn't find one, and built it.
What you get. One key for more than 1,000 models. Hosted providers, your own provider keys, bring your own, or models running locally or in your own cloud, all behind one endpoint at the provider's price. Zero markup on routed tokens. They earn on hosted inference and a pro tier instead. Point your code at their base URL and keep everything else. They list OpenAI, Anthropic, Gemini, Meta, Qwen, DeepSeek, Mistral, plus inference providers like Bedrock, Azure AI Foundry, Fireworks, Vertex, and OpenRouter.
The management layer is substantial. One key per person, agent, and tool, with admin set caps by day, week, or month, enforced on every request. So the bill is the number you planned. Model allow lists, local-only scopes, roles. The console shows spend and usage by agent, person, model, or day. Live request logs with the route, the fallback, and the price the provider charged. There's a nice example in their dashboard mockup of a request that got a 429 and failed over to another provider midstream.
But the part they're most excited about is the intelligence layer. Every request shares one trace format, so the platform can catch cache misses and wasted tokens, recommend better models, including new models the day they ship, identify work that should run asynchronously or in batches, and train specialized models on your traffic that you own. They claim repeated tokens come back at 90% off when caching is enabled, and their dashboard example shows cache hit rate going from 14% to 71% after fixes.
The fine-tuning case studies are the boldest claims, so let's label them as theirs. A 9-byte model distilled from a teacher model working 1,000 computer use tasks on Mac VMs scored in closed-loop simulation. They claim 50% more tasks completed than the untrained 9 bytes, 7 times faster than Opus 4.8, at 97% lower cost. And a 4 bytes model trained with GRPO on the public Everette benchmark, run on 500 held out claims, 9.4 times faster than Haiku 4.5 at 90% lower cost, with a claimed 10.9% improvement in verdict accuracy. And importantly, they say a fine-tuned model is proved in simulation before it serves, and never switches on by itself. You turn it on.
On traction, and again, this is their reporting, a week after launching on Hacker News, they say more than 1,000 developers and 50-plus companies have used it, processing over 10 billion tokens daily with 880-plus GitHub stars. For launch, several models are free through the end of the week.
Community questions focused on two things. Security. One person asked outright whether it's safe to connect billing for model access. Another asked how sensitive prompts and traffic data are handled when learning from usage. And mechanics, like whether cache locality factors into routing cost and how it works through Codex versus Claude code. One commenter gave a fairly concrete endorsement, calling it open router without the 5% markup, easy to slip between your code and the models. Though we should note that comparison is one user's framing, not a benchmark.
So if you're mapping the agent stack, Hyperprobe observes production, Reflexo learns from what happens, Ponytail restrains what gets built, Diff and Gitwarren coordinate work through the repo, and Experiential routes everything underneath. That's a coherent picture of where agent infrastructure is heading, though every piece of it is early, and the evidence is mostly maker-reported.
Okay, big exhale. Let's shift to something completely different. Tools for honest personal records. And the first one has a rule I find genuinely compelling. Your journal entry locks at 8 p.m. And once it locks, that's it.
The app is called At 8 p.m., iPhone only, free to download with up to 2 entries per day. The maker says the idea came from wanting to capture how he actually felt in the moment, not how he remembers feeling later. Most journaling apps let you edit, rewrite, or delete anything, which is useful, but it also makes it too easy to unintentionally rewrite your own history. So At 8 p.m. does the opposite. Entries lock at a time you configure, 8 p.m. by default, and after that, no editing, no rewriting, no quietly polishing what you actually felt.
Feature-wise, rich text, bold, italic, underline, strike-through, voice notes you see as a waveform, photos, locations. The new gimmick is the scoop, a quick scroll video note recorded right inside the entry, no separate screen, and you can flip the camera before recording. There's a streak system, a lock ring showing how much time is left before today closes, and moods, so you can mark how a moment felt. You can turn any entry into a designed card and share it to Instagram stories, private until you decide otherwise.
Privacy is the other pillar. Entries sync across your devices through your own private iCloud, never a first or third-party server. The App Store listing says no data is collected, and you can lock the whole app behind Face 499.
Now, the lock isn't absolute, and it's worth being precise about this. Locked entries can optionally be made editable again for 24 hours by spending an unlock credit, purchasable in the app. So the honesty is soft by design. The maker clearly knows people will occasionally need an escape hatch, and he's monetized it as an optional extra rather than making it core. The Pro subscription, $29.99 per their listing among other price points, unlocks unlimited entries. It's very new. The app hasn't received enough ratings to display an overview, and commenters were asking the obvious logistics. Does the lock time follow your phone across time zones when traveling? Or stay anchored to where you set it up? And is there an Android version planned? Neither answered in what we have.
Another commenter said the privacy approach, personal iCloud rather than a server, is what makes it feel comfortable for private thoughts. Which tracks? The whole product is a bet that friction against rewriting yourself is a feature, not a bug.
And that same idea, preserving the real thing, unpolished, is the heart of our next one, which is emotionally the heaviest product in today's batch, Retold. It turns family voices into hand-drawn story films.
The founder, Carl, tells the origin story himself. His nan passed away a few years ago, and he still had a voicemail she left his sister, and funny clips of her trying to use Alexa. Hearing her real voice mattered, but the files just sat in a phone folder, anonymous audio, not something the family would naturally return to.
So Retold keeps the real voice. You record a new story, one big red button, no forms, no typing, or import an old voice note. The app listens and sketches the story as it's told, following the people, places, and little details into a hand-drawn film timed to the voice. The examples on the site are lovely. The day Nan fell in the canal, told by Granddad, disputed by Nan. How we met, 1963. The dance hall, the wrong bus, the right girl. Every story goes on a family shelf, so the grandkids can press play at bedtime, in a voice they'd know anywhere.
It's in beta on iPhone with Android closed testing underway. Free tier gets you up to 5 stories. Paid is £5.99 monthly or £39.99 yearly, about 77p a week, as they put it, with unlimited stories, the whole family watching, and, this is a notable promise, yours forever, even if you stop paying.
Now, the community raised the question I think anyone in this category has to answer. One commenter said, the story behind it is genuinely moving, but the thing that gives them pause is that the source material is often a recording of someone who can't consent to how it's used after the fact, especially old voicemails from people who've passed. What's the actual data policy? Is the audio processed and then deleted? Kept on a server indefinitely, or ever used beyond generating that one family's film?
That's unanswered in the source, and it's the kind of question that can make or break trust in this category. The promise, yours forever, is about access. The open question is about processing. Worth watching how they answer it.
From family memories to two small everyday utilities. First, commute bar. Live commute times in your Mac menu bars.
The maker's origin. One day he was about to start driving, saw the roads were clear, figured he'd get home early, and then traffic showed up 15 minutes later, after he was already outside. What he wanted wasn't another app to open. It was a quick indicator within sight, right next to the clock, the place he always checks.
So Commute Bar puts live commute times permanently in the menu bars, updating as traffic changes, no app switching. You save multiple destinations, office, school, gym, schedule automatic switching for recurring commutes, and get leave soon, leave now indicators with optional notifications. There's route comparison, delayed traffic alerts, and different travel modes. Privacy. Location stays on your Mac. No accounts or logins. BecOS 14 and up on the Mac App Store with a lifetime license. No subscription, which one commenter called refreshing for a small utility.
The community got the concept immediately, turning "Should I leave now?" into a quick glance rather than a decision. One commenter compared it favorably to their current hack of running Waze on the phone while sitting at the computer. And one good open question. With automatic destination switching, what happens on a day with a stop in between? Dropping a kid off before work? Does it show the next saved destination in sequence, or do you switch manually? That wasn't answered. Another commenter wondered about using it for longer trips, state to state, though the product is clearly built around recurring commutes.
And the last of the small utilities, Kubrick, which bills itself as the letterboxed alternative, made by someone named Zachary, a self-described passion project. Fast, elegant movie tracking. Search a film, rate it, cue it, rank what to watch next.
The different genres he names, no ads, Letterboxd has them, this doesn't, TV shows included from the start, and a catch-all import feature to bring your films and shows over from nearly everywhere. There's an iOS app, and the site uses TMDB data.
One commenter articulated why ranking what to watch next matters. A huge watch list is something you never actually use. Keeping the queue focused is more practical. Another suggested a shared queue for couples or friends, where everyone adds movies and votes on what gets watched next, to end the 30-minute argument about what to pick. Fun idea, not a shipped feature.
And the sharpest community question was about the import. Letterboxd uses a 5-star half-star scale, IMDb uses 10 points, some trackers use thumbs up or down. When you import years of ratings, does Kubrick convert scales proportionally so your relative rankings survive, or does it map everything roughly and leave you re-rating things to fix it? That's a make-or-break detail for the import feature, and it's unanswered in what we have.
We'll close with two creator tools that both solve the same problem from different directions. Your work exists, but getting it the last mile, posted or built, is its own chore.
First, Postbox. The founder, Jason, loves designing in Figma, fixating over pixel-perfect details, but hates formatting and staging designs to be engaging on social platforms. So Postbox turns the MacBook notch into a drag-and-drop staging area. Drag and export up into the notch, write the caption once, and post to X, Blueski, Threads, LinkedIn, Dribbble, Behance, Cosmos, Instagram, and Pinterest at once.
To be precise about what's live, X, Blueski, LinkedIn, Dribbble, Behance, and Cosmos post today. Threads, Instagram, and Pinterest are marked as coming. Sign in now, and they start posting the day each one lands. The clever part is present. An art direction canvas inside the draft, devices, layouts, grounds, padding, and there's no export step because the composition itself is the attachment. You sign in on each platform's own page. Postbox keeps the session, never the password.
Pricing. Free forever with 5 posts every 30 days, 2 max on 1 license. Pro is $9.99 a month, or $119.88 billed annually with unlimited posts and unlimited accounts, 14-day free trial. Requires macOS 26.2. Community reaction liked the notch interaction. One person called it a genuinely clever use of dead space. Requests. Scheduled sending and combined video plus text posts. And one sharp question. X, Instagram, Pinterest, and LinkedIn all want different aspect ratios and caption lengths. Does Postbox auto-adapt the crop and trim the caption per platform? Or is it one export and one text everywhere, with some platforms getting an awkward crop? Not answered in the source. And honestly, it's the crux of whether Post Everywhere actually works.
And finally, the most delightfully weird one. Brick Forger AI. Type a prompt. Get a brick model you can actually build. Not a render. A real, buildable kit.
And the maker is refreshingly honest about where the difficulty lies. The AI image and mesh generation is the easy, bought-in part. The real work is the brick-placing engine. Voxelizing the shape. Tiling it with actual Lego-compatible parts from a 55-part library, including slopes and curves for smoother surfaces. Staggering the seams so it doesn't crack apart like a loose stack, then running structural analysis, a connectivity graph and gravity load to catch anything that would fall apart, and auto-repairing it before it reaches you. They're adding techniques like sideways building, snot in brick speak.
Most generated models, they say, come out with 100% connectivity and few flagged issues on BrickLink Studio's stability checker. you get a downloadable LDRD file, a full parts list, and step-by-step PDF build instructions, so you preview in 3D with part count and colors, pay to download, order the bricks, and build. Free plan gives 3 credits a month, and you pay only to download the file. Part geometry comes from the LDRAW Parts Library, and they're careful to note they're not affiliated with or endorsed by the LEGO Group or BrickLink.
One commenter nailed why the deliverables matter. The file, parts list, and PDF. Turn the result from something you can look at into something you can actually sit down and build. That's the difference from the AI LEGO generators the maker criticizes, which render a nice picture you can never buy bricks for. The feature request that would take it further, a parts cost estimate, or build this using the bricks I already own.
And that's the batch. From agents that debug production at 2 a.m., to agents that learn and hold back, to the repos and gateways that keep them in line, and then all the way down to a locked journal, a grandmother's voicemail, and a dragon made of bricks.
Everything we covered today is fresh off launch, so treat the numbers as claims, check the open questions yourself, and we'll see you tomorrow with the next briefing.
Thanks for listening.